Gentlemen, before I get started, the off button, the excellence, off button, perfect. I wanted to dedicate this sikha to Lilu Nishmas Asher Dov Ben Reuven Chaim, who Arya's brother, beloved brother, whose yahrzeit is today. And obviously, we thank this troubled family for being here with us and allowing us, perhaps in our small way, to give the family nechama and certainly try to the best we could to be Habatas Torah, Si Mishnayis, of Shach Mishnayis, done by the yeshiva, Lilu Nishmas Asher, to do our little part to give the neshama an aliyah and hopefully to give some nechama to the family. I just want to express a tremendous sense of Hakaras HaTov to all the families, in particular the families who really spent a lot of time in the Beis Medrash, the families who sat here learning with their sons in Shir, outside of Shir, Beis Medrash, and so forth. A tremendous, tremendous chizuk has been for our Beis Medrash. A tremendous, tremendous lesson that you've given our boys, taking the time from your free week, your vacation, your free time, and spending it in the Beis Medrash, learning with your sons. It's an unbelievable role model, an unbelievable message that you're transmitting to the boys. And I also want to single out, it's not just a number of parents are here without their spouses. So it's important to recognize not just the spouses that are here, but also the spouses that let the spouse come. I know when I travel to the States, my wife is very quick to remind me over and over and over again how difficult it is for her, and it is difficult for her. But it's certainly a testament to how your machshiv Torah and growth and Yiddishkeit and your families are, and hopefully the boys are really taking that lesson. Every week I stand up here, and you don't really realize this, but you should realize it. I'm going to tell you, this is a therapeutic session for me, and I kind of am able to get things off my chest, share with you things that I'm thinking about, sometimes about life, sometimes about the yeshiva in specific, and I'm able to unload a little bit on you. And to be honest, there is a topic that has been on my mind for about 4 or 5 years. I spoke to the yeshiva about it 2 years ago, and I'm going to speak about it again because it's very much on my mind again, and it's something we think about all the time. I'm going to read to you, it's going to take a little bit of time, a two-page article that was published online on a website dedicated to Jewish education. And the topic of this short article is called The Closing of the One-Year Program Mind. And it is about the year in Israel, and about yeshivos and seminaries and what goes on in the year in Israel. And I want to share with you something that I think this article hits very, very directly, very profoundly, and really is picking up on a lot of MS, and we'll use it as a trigger. Here we go. Hashem is so cool. He's like my best friend, so exclaimed Ariella. Real person, fake name. And this is not on, what's that thing called?
Sem Girl Says.
Sem what? Sem Girl Says. This is well before Sem Girl Says. Although I was talking to some of the boys, the concept Sem Girl Says has been around for a while as a concept. But okay, well, my wife was a teacher in a high school, whose name will not be named at all, a very, very fine high school, she teaches Tanakh in the high school. And whenever she discussed a mafarish on the Chumash, she would always explain a little biographical note about the mafarish. She's in an all-girls class, and she's teaching about the Ramban, some one of the Mefarshim. So she has to throw a little biographical information about the Ramban. So she tells the girl, the girls in the class, the Ramban was born 1115. A hand goes up. Mrs. Isaacson, was that AM or PM? Anyway. Okay, so Ariella, real person, fake name. She's Hashem is so cool, all that. Not long into her post-high school year of study in Israel. Ariella has been the pride and joy of her high school administration. She is smart, well-spoken, attractive, and cool. She considers her Limudei Kodesh seriously as a matter of schooling and as a guiding force for how she wants to live. A year in Israel after high school graduation is as natural to her academic journey as the BA that follows it. Her only question was which of several institutions would suit her best. Remarkably, however, Ariella is hard-pressed to articulate why she has traveled 6,000 miles for a year of yeshiva study. It's what you do. It's what everyone does. Unlike some of her classmates, she needed no push by her high school administration, and yes, she's thrilled to be in Israel. It's fabulous. So many great tulim, and the girls are great, and the teachers are great. But she has no conscious personal goals, which makes it unlikely that she will attain them. The year in Israel has been transformed from a year of intensive Torah education to a gap year of entertainment, diminished responsibilities, and personal release from some of the academic pressures of high school where grades really matter. There are two sides to the gap year coin. The first good side is that many more people are coming, but the second bad side involves a watering down of the learning and the seriousness of the endeavor. The coming paragraphs will focus on this downside, though I admit it is probably not easy to improve things. What then is the problem? More students are coming now than in the years past, which has sprouted more yeshivot to serve their needs. This proliferation of new programs is a blessing, both because it enables students to find programs that are right for them, and because in theory, greater competition should force programs to make themselves better. Yet, what's really happening is that competition pushes the yeshivas to sell their products by making the students happier. To some extent, the yeshivas and women's programs have become merchandise, and the administrations therefore must hawk their wares to the customer. And the customer, as we know, is always right. To make matters worse, schools are under enormous pressure to make their customer students happy quickly. If the current students are not pleased with their institution when recruiting season begins in early November at the latest, even those who are most appropriate to follow in their friends' tracks are unlikely to do so. No recruiter wants to sit down at an Israel night and hear the following question. Well, I was considering your yeshiva, but I just heard from my friend who said it was too hard for him and he's not enjoying himself. There's not enough time for teachers to explain to students, listen very carefully, yes, this is hard, and it's going to stay hard for weeks, if not months. If you struggle in the Beit Midrash and concentrate and review after a few months of frustration, you will reap your own reward. That's what my Rabbein told me in Yeshiva many years ago. Today, it's hard to imagine anybody saying anything like that in a great many schools. Good education takes time, effort, and personal investment. In this era of instantaneous gratification, however, students often lack the patience to invest and wait to reap their rewards. Furthermore, instantaneous communication with parents and school administrators means the first sign of complaint, grievance, or even simple discomfort puts pressure on veteran educators who know better to keep all of the people happy all of the time. Inherently, a no-win situation. One frustrated Shana Aleph educator has dubbed the institution's catering services, driven as they are by market demands. And what sells to these consumers? Says the author, let's call it edutainment. Less time to Beit Midrash, since learning the Beit Midrash can be hard and boring, and it requires more stamina than a teenager can easily muster. More frontal class time where the kids hear the teacher explain things, but do not have to work things out on their own. Teachers have to worry deeply about how much the students like them. After all, If the customers are not happy, the administration had better find a new sales rep. The result? Increasing the amount of weight given to personal charisma and choosing staff. Decreasing the amount that a lifetime of learning and personal spiritual gravitas matters in hiring. A lot of more serious sources in translation or an easy to digest sound bites so that students get it quickly and avoid the frustration of fighting through longer, more difficult sources. A dramatic increase in canceled learning due to some TEL or other extracurricular activities. With edutainment, students lose out on the thrill of personal discovery gained through puzzling things out independently. And they lose out on the skills that puzzling things out independently affords them. Invaluable for the future when the charismatic instructor will not be standing before them. And worse, those talented instructors must focus on the pyrotechnics of charisma instead of real learning. All the culture of excellence that was once the calling card of the year in Israel has been replaced with a culture of enjoyment and marketing. Who is hurt by all this? Not the students who do find their way to the most rigorous programs, and not the students who would fail in such programs. The strongest and weakest edges of the student spectrum will get what they need and what they want. But many in the middle, and the author, I don't know really how many are being cheated. If they were exposed to something more serious, they might get into it. But since they are not, they may not maximize their potential. They may continue to think that edutainment is the best Torah has to offer. Parents and Israel advisors are also being cheated who sometimes have very serious misimpressions. It goes on in the same vein, one more paragraph. Often too much substance and you may well lose many of your students. It's not just an economic problem, but an educational one. No schools, not even those most marred in edutainment, are opposed to serious Torah study, but they find themselves pulled downwards in this downward spot. That's the thrust of this piece. And again, the piece, again, if you focused on the message, is something that really permeates all aspects, many aspects of modern day life. You take a look, for example, Lahavdil, and it's the worst manifestation, most dangerous manifestation comes when it comes to our educational Torah institutions. But if you look, for example, at the media and the TV shows that are out there and the entertainment industry that is out there, one goes ahead and sees a very, perhaps slow, gradual, but over the years, a very, very slippery slope to go ahead and develop programs, develop shows, movies, and the like that will sell to the common masses. And often that means a media, a type of program that is more appealing to the prurient interests of man, more decadent, less intellectually stimulating, more appealing to the base man, because ultimately that's what sells. And what works perhaps, and what might be legitimate even when it comes to the entertainment media industry, if that starts to infiltrate education, Torah, yeshivot, you come to a situation where you have dilution, dilution, dilution. And obviously, that's not a very healthy thing. And I think anyone who's works in the yeshivas, this 1 or 2 year program that you have in many, many yeshivot, and someone who's been around, again, seen the spectrum from 20, 25, 30 years ago to today, we had a proliferation. A good friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, is opening up a new yeshiva next year. And this is what the author's talking about. A yeshiva that's not meant for boys who are meant to be in a yeshiva of full-time learning. Not meant for them. It's not being marketed to them. It's not meant for them. It's a yeshiva that will have some learning in the morning, will have some kind of evening lectures and speakers and the like, and they'll do chesed in the afternoon. And such an institution definitely has a place for boys who can't handle a proper yeshiva program, who can't handle a full day learning program. But what ends up happening is that all of a sudden, because of market phenomena, because of you got to pay Rebbe's salaries, and all of a sudden we start recruiting, and then all of a sudden a boy, you know what, yeah, a high school senior might look at that kind of program. Again, he's a good friend of mine, and I wish him a tremendous amount of hatzlacha for the right kind of boy. But all of a sudden, people start to say, you know what, that looks appealing. Sitting in yeshiva learning all day, that's tough. That's arduous. That might be something that I'd rather have what we'll call a more secular type of gap year experience in Israel, experiencing Israel, going on to Yulim, doing chesed, some learning, and I'll go ahead and have, that'll be my year in Israel. And the sense of hard work, of hasmada, of true intensity in finding my chelek in Torah and building my Torah foundation that's going to last me for the rest of my life starts to get diluted. And this program opens up and another program, all of a sudden, as the author starts to develop, we're talking edutainment. You know, we had some great speakers here this week. Every one of them was better than the next. You know, we had Rav Wenger on Sunday, fantastic. We had Rav Lavi Greenspan on Monday, unbelievably inspiring. We had Tuesday night, Rav Gad, unbelievable, entertainment, classic edutainment. People that are very, very good at what they do, excellent at what they do. And they're inspiring, and they're uplifting, and you listen, and they're entertaining. But at the end of the day, we can get a quick jolt of, wow, that was inspiring. Rav Greenspan is so inspiring. It's a quick jolt. And it's meaningful. And we might say after we hear him and how he talks about how important Torah is to him and how much he misses the opportunity to open up and look with his own eyes on a Daf Gemara, learn a Rambam, learn a Pasuk and Chumash with Rashi. And we might find ourselves inspired and uplifted. But then comes the really hard work of going into the base medrash and starting to really crack your heads on the Gemara and on Rashi and really break something down with zitzfleisch, with effort. That already is difficult. It's very easy to hear someone entertain, edutain, ideas, Torah ideas, and we can laugh and we can enjoy. But at the end of the day, what really is going to stick and what really is going to last and it's really going to be profound, you're going to take with you next year, the year after, 10 years down the line, is if the Torah goes ahead and really ingrains itself and finds itself at your core. And that does not come from a lecture here, a lecture there. It comes from the day in, day out. It comes from tremendously hard work. We heard this morning from Rabbi Mann speaking about Mesiris Nefesh. If there is one ingredient that makes the Torah stick, the glue that makes Torah stick, not just now when you're in the fire of yeshiva, but that's going to make the Torah stick next year, the year after, 10 years down the line, is if it's a Torah that comes with Mesiris Nefesh, that I'm giving something up, that I'm working for it. Once you're working for it, once you're invested in it, once you've given over some of your Nefesh, your Moser Nefesh for it, all of a sudden, it starts to stick. And all of a sudden, it's something I'm going to want to come back to. And we find this anytime you want, any person has a real sense of growth, a real sense of revelation, we find there's always an element of Mesiris Nefesh, I have to give something up. And once I give it up, then I can have a sense of revelation. We read a few weeks ago about Moshe Rabbeinu's first revelation, Parsha Shmos. And if you look at the Pesukim Parsha Shmos, you'll note Moshe, his birth is described as very, very anonymous. Ishmi Beis Levi took a woman from Sheva Levi, from Bas Levi. A baby is born, he's not named. Anonymous mother, anonymous father, and an anonymous baby. Bas Pala takes the baby in, names him Moshe Kimin Amay Mishisil. Gives him an Egyptian name, and he's raised in an Egyptian household. Nursed by a Jewish mother, raised in an Egyptian household. And right away we're told Moshe in his early years is confronted with his two backgrounds. His Mitzri culture that he's raised in and his Yehudi. And he sees a Mitzri attacking a Yehudi. And that's Moshe's first act of Mesiris Nefesh, not just to stand back as one of his brothers is being persecuted, beaten, but he steps up and he takes action. Mitzri versus Yehudi. And Moshe stands up for the oppressor and defends the victim. The next day, for Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't matter that it's Mitzri versus Yehudi, the very next day, it's Yehudi versus Yehudi. And once again, Moshe says, Lama taka re'echa, why Jew against Jew? Why is one acting improperly, hurting, oppressing, beating his brother? And once again, Moshe's ready to take action. And then we're told one or two psukim later, he finds himself in Midian. And it doesn't matter. Two goyim. The Nos Yisro and the shepherds of Midian. And there's also a clash. Doesn't make a difference. Whether it's Yehudi, Mitzri, sure he's going to defend Yehudi. What's the Chiddush? Yehudi, he defends the victim. Even if it's two goyim. Moshe is there as a Moshiach, as there as someone to defend the victim. And it's as a result of that Midah, being Moshe Nefesh, he gave up. He had to flee the comforts of life in the palace, in the serious Nefesh. And as a result of this approach, being Moshe Nefesh, that's what enables Moshe. The next Tzukim, we're told he's in, finds himself in Har Chorev. And there's a hitgalut, there's shchina, there's a snare, and then he has his revelation. It's no coincidence whatsoever. That revelation is always followed by mesiras nefesh. The person kicks back, relaxes, chills out, and that's his approach to Yiddishkeit. He's never ever going to find it profound. He's never going to find it internalized. Mesiras nefesh is the recipe. And is the key ingredient to real true growth in Yiddishkeit. Avraham Avinu is not given the command of Lech Lecha, start your mission, develop a relation with me, Hashem, in Eretz Yisrael, until the Kibshon Ha'esh, until he has to be Moshe Nefesh for his values, for what he believes in, for what's crucially important to him. Only then does Hashem invite him, Lech Lecha, join me, come with me on my journey. And in this week's parsha as well, we find Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, 210 years of Golus. And Chazal tell us they were on Memtesh Shari Tuma. They descended to the depths. And yes, they were promised they're going to be taken out of Mitzrayim. It's going to happen. But there's no such thing as getting a Kriyas Yamsuf. Getting a trip to Har Sinai, getting Torah. There's no such thing as that without Mesiras Nefesh. And they're told we have one, there's a get out of jail ticket. There's a requirement, a prerequisite to leave Mitzrayim. And that is a very, very special carbon. To go ahead and take a carbon Pesach, to take the set, take it on the 10th day of the month, hold it for 4 days until the 14th. And then you go ahead, a specific set, one-year-old male. You hold it for 4 days, and then 4 days later, you shecht it. You take the blood, put it on the mezuzot, you roast it. If you cook it, it's pasul. It must be roasted. If you eat it raw, no good. It must be roasted. It must be roasted whole. Rosh al-Kra'ah. Head on a spit through the entire innards of the animal, roasted whole. Can you break bones on the Korban Pesach? Passes. You can't break bones. It's a lotase. And then you have to eat it. Roasted bechabura with the group, with the family. If you leave any over till the next morning, hanos amenu ad boker, is not vera. If you did, and you didn't consume it entirely, another mitzvah. Ba'esh. Why so many mitzvos with this Korban Pesach? What is the message of these mitzvos? Detail upon detail upon detail. So many details to this mitzvah. And there's a famous Sefer HaChinuch on this week's parasha, which I do not want to develop, I just want to mention to you. The Sefer HaChinuch says, you know why the details? Because Achrei HaMa'asim Nimshachim HaLevavot. Because there is a notion of outside in. You do a mitzvah, you do another mitzvah, you make a bracha, you hit minyanim, another one, you might not be into it, another one, all of a sudden, you become habituated in a Torah lifestyle. All of a sudden, it does internalize. All of a sudden, it does penetrate. So yes, it's like the famous Who's the famous pointillist artist? Thank you. Seurat. The famous pointillist artist, Seurat. It's all points. A point, a point, a point, a point. When you look at it up close, all you see is points of color. And then you take a step back and you see this brilliant, brilliant, beautiful painting. That's the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, a mitzvah, what's the point? Why this? Why that? Yes. But when you keep on adding the points, all of a sudden, you have a life that is internalized, that is a beautiful, colorful portrait of what it means to be an Eved Hashem. That's not the idea that I want to mention. In addition to the Sefer HaChinuch, perhaps one could suggest, it seems to be the Pashut Pshat, we all know, what was the embodiment of the Mitzri deity? It was the Seth. Bnei Yisrael had been in Mitzri society for 210 years. Avdus, Mentes Shari Tuma. They needed a get out of jail free ticket. They needed an act of Mesiris Nefesh. And the act of Mesiris Nefesh was to take your persecutor's God, to take the representation of what his society represented. Hold on to it for 4 days. Take it on the 10th. You know what happens to a sheep when you're tied up by the bedpost for 4 days? It starts to cry. It starts to call out. And the mitzvah were helpless to do anything. Bnei Yisrael starts to get confidence. Take that guy. Put it on a skewer. So you see it. Roast it. When you go and cook meat, when you cook food, it starts to decompose. It starts to break down. That's what cooking does. You lose the vision of what this was because it starts to, a piece of meat looks nothing like a calf. When you take an animal whole and you put it on a spit and you start to roast it, you could see that Mitzri God, the representative of their life, and you see it start to break down. You see it, and again, once again, confidence. It's not enough. It's not enough just to roast it. Then Chazat, the Torah tells us, it's a whole animal, you can't have broken bones, you start to eat it. And a total, if you will, a statement that Klal Yisrael, Judaism, Hashem, is the ultimate victor, and it's going to go ahead and bring Yeshua. Of going ahead and affirming the messages of Yahadus, of Halacha, of Klal Yisrael, and overcoming the pernicious culture of Mitzrayim. You consume it. Not enough just to roast it, but to consume it. And if for some reason you left some over, you don't bury it. You don't just put it in the garbage. Now you have to take that leftover, which you're not allowed to have. But if you have it, and you have to burn it. So what's left? What's left is just ashes. Nothing's left. This was Bnei Yisrael's way to extricate themselves from Avdus. They take Bris Milah, that blood, and they take the blood of Korban Pesach. That's Mesiris Nefesh. The blood of Milah and the blood of saying, you know what? We're not Mitzri. We might have sunk to 49th level of Tumah. We are not Mitzri. And you take their God and you go ahead and bring it down. Reduce it to at best your stomach, at worst ashes. That's how we extricate ourselves. It does not come easy. And the world of edutainment, which is a lot of fun, and it sells, and it might cause some yeshivot to have really, really big numbers. But that's not chinuch. What is chinuch is hard work. What is Torah, real Torah, is to go ahead and sit and plug away. V'higisabo yomam balayla. To go ahead and plug and to connect to the beauty of Torah Hashem. To connect to the beauty and profundity of learning, of tefillah, of chesed, of a proper sense of midos. Stephen Covey, author of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, just give the following mashal. It's one I shared my shir a number of times. He says, most of us in our educational careers, if you're anything like anybody, you've probably at some point in your life had a test. And when you had your tests, you're like me, you crammed for the test. You went ahead the night before the test, maybe the night before, and you started to really, really study. And you put in a lot of hours, maybe even an all-nighter, and you studied. You took the test the next day, and gentlemen, does cramming work?
Yeah.
It worked for me. It works really, really well. You could do well on tests by cramming. He says, however, imagine you're a farmer for a second, and imagine cramming on the farm. It's a week before the harvest season, 2 days before the harvest season. Tomorrow's the day to harvest. You know what? But I've been sitting around for the past 4 months doing nothing. But I'm going to cram. I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to start plowing the soil. We'll do that. Do well. I'm going to plant. I'm going to water. I'm going to find a lot of sunlight. So that in 2 days from now, I'm going to go ahead and harvest my crops. Guess what? Ain't going to work. It does not work. It works in school. In school, cramming works. In the real world, where real results matter, not artificial tests, but real results matter, you got to put in your time. You got to put in your work. It doesn't come easy, I hate to say. In real education, secular education, you want to do well on tests in college and in grad school, and even perhaps the bar exam. You could go ahead and cram as necessary, you'll do well. But the nature of things is, if it comes in easy, it typically goes out pretty quickly as well. Education, real education, when you become knowledgeable, you become sophisticated, you become educated, requires a proper sense of work. You're doing your readings, maybe even doing more readings. Maybe spending more time in the library, studying throughout the semester, not just the night before, doing papers, not just the night before, and so forth. It's not human nature, because we like to have fun. But it is the process of human development. And certainly, kol shekein ben benoshel kol shekein. Person wants to be a ben Torah. Wants to really connect to Torah. I wish I could tell you it was easy. I wish I could tell you all your rabbeim just right before the smicha exam went ahead and crammed, and now all of a sudden they can open up any gemara, any tesis, and go ahead and work through it. I wish I could tell you it was easy. But it's not. It's not. But if it's important, which we all know it is, and again, for those in my shiurim, Mr. Kobe, I won't repeat it, quadrant two. If it's important, it's worth the time. It's worth the struggle. It's worth the investment. And it's not just about this year or next year. Torah is a lifelong endeavor. Torah is a lifelong commitment. It's a living life of Torah, to be kovei itim haTorah. But now, when you have nothing on your plate, nothing on your plate, the biggest thing you have on your plate is waiting online for food at dinner. That's the biggest thing you have, to maybe do some laundry. That's the biggest thing you have on your plate. To go ahead and understand the Yesod of Mesiras Nefesh. To understand that, what that's all about. It's 42 days till Purim. I'll throw out an idea. 42 days till Purim. There's some guys here who picked up, I want to finish Siddurim of Mishnayos. And again, our learning now, Lila Nishmas, Usher, motivated boys to finish Masechtas. No reason, from now to the end of the year, a Seder in Mishnayos is not accomplishable. Very, very doable. Make yourself a goal, and then start day by day to do it. 42 days for Purim, 32 blot in Masechtas Megillah. Not a problem, if you set your mind to doing it. Make a siyum at your Rebbe's Purim Suda on Masechtas Megillah. Not impossible. Not impossible. Something very, very doable if you set your mind. Is it easy? No one's saying it's easy. Set yourself goals. Be Moser Nefesh. And you'll certainly 100% be the beneficiaries. I just want to close with, once again, the best example for our boys of Mesiras Nefesh is the families and the parents who spent so much time in this space Nefesh this past week. Tremendous sense of Mesiris Nefesh, and even for them, with a very, very profound sense of Hakar Satov, and a profound lesson of what you gave us, and what you're giving us, and what you constantly give us, that sense of value, to take your vacation and spend it with your son in your Beis Medrash is a tremendous, tremendous thing. For our boys, the past 3-4 weeks, I'll be honest with you, have been very, very tumultuous. Alumni streaming in and out. Mattresses everywhere. Rebbe's perhaps pulled in different directions. Alumni this, that, and the other thing that's been there. Parents streaming in and out. Whether in the Beis Medrash or outside the Beis Medrash, there's been a lot of parents the past week or so. And it's been wonderful. But next week, we start to get back, Baruch Hashem, to normal. And normal means parents is great. Mom is great. And we'll see a Pesach. But it's time to refocus, re-energize, set our goals in a very, very meaningful way. Don't get confused by the flavor of the month, by edutainment. Understand that real growth, real connection to Torah requires real work. There's no doubt in my mind that every single person here has it in them, can do it, and will do it. But we have to go ahead and make it happen. Again, everyone's going to be invited now to the downstairs to the Chadar Ochel. We'll make a siyum on Mishnayos, Shas Mishnayos, Mishmas, Ashes Trouble, and then we'll have a siyum.